this is a normal day's traffic in Saigon. Imagine if two or three times this big for the Tet holiday. The job of stopping each of these cars, searching them, and checking the people for their papers, why, it staggers the imagination. It staggered the ability of the Vietnamese police to handle, too. While some residents of Saigon certainly had to be privy to the communist plans, there didn't have to be a lot of them with some people in charge. Just a few Viet Cong sympathizers in whose homes arms could be stored, arms smuggled into town, one by one, or even piece by piece. And then, on the night of Tet, the soldiers, Viet Cong, North Vietnamese, slipped into town one by one, rendezvoused at the arms caches, and the offensive was on. The intelligence people, American and Vietnamese, agree on the same story. They figured the enemy might launch a big attack on Saigon or another South Vietnamese city. But they admit they grossly underestimated the enemy's ability to plan, to provision, to coordinate, to launch such a widespread, full-scale attack as this. There are some odd stories about this intelligence failure. High American sources, for instance, say that they warned the Vietnamese, but they let their troops go on Tet leave anyway until some units were down to just 10% of normal strength. Some American newsmen say they tried to reach the Vietnamese General Staff headquarters and only a sergeant was on duty. There are even stories believed by many Vietnamese intellectuals that Chief of Police Lo An and Vice President Ky warned President Thieu. But Thieu thought it was some sort of a trick, perhaps a coup, and ignored the warnings. Thieu himself was at his country home at Mae Tho outside of town. Took him 6 hours to get back after the attack. And in the meantime, Vice President Ky signed the first defensive orders, and many Vietnamese intellectuals thought that indeed Ky had engineered a coup. There was even a suspicion that some of the police on checkpoint duty on the highways outside of town accepted bribes instead of identity papers, all in the spirit of Tet, and that many communists got in that way. But with all of this planning, what did the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong hope to accomplish? Well, we talked to a longtime expert on the Viet Cong, who translated many of the captured documents and interrogated prisoners, Douglas Pike, about that.
Well, I think that General Jacques, who I see as the master architect of the offensive, was trying to do three things. I think he was trying to cause the disintegration of ARVN, the Vietnamese Armed Forces, as an organized military system. I think he was trying to cause an uprising of people in the cities, civilians, and a kind of spontaneous outburst of support for the Viet Cong. And I think he was trying to throw a monkey wrench into what he considers the well-oiled American military machine here. It seems to me all the evidence trying to put things together after this battle, that those were his major calculations.
If the communist intention was to take and seize the cities, they came closer here at Hue than anywhere else. And now, 3 weeks after the offensive began, the firing still goes on from here on the new side of the city, across the Perfume River to the old side, the Citadel. Probably a week before this offensive began, the Army of North Vietnam, with Viet Cong support, began moving into the mountains to the south of here, one day's march away. And then the day before the offensive began, January 30th to 31st, they began that march toward the city. Meanwhile, another regiment of the NVA were moving in from the north into the city, the old citadel, from the north. And they swept quickly through it too, except for a small corner in the northeast of the citadel held by the South Vietnamese Army headquarters. It was a tough fight. It was house to house, door to door, room to room. They found they couldn't get into the doors and the windows. The North Vietnamese Army held them too tightly and booby-trapped them as well. They had to blast their way in with plastic charges placed against the sides of the houses. It was such a tough fight that although the American Army hoped not to use heavy weapons and airstrikes against this old city, they finally had to bring them in to begin to win the battle. The destruction here was almost total. There's scarcely an inhabitable building in the city of Hue. Whatever price the communists paid for this offensive, the price for the Allied cause was high. For if our intention is to restore normalcy, peace, serenity to this country, the destruction of those qualities in this, the most historic or probably serene of all South Vietnam cities, is obviously a setback. Now, a job no one had dreamed we were going to have to undertake. It is now the rebuilding of an entire city and the lives of the people in it. What did the communists hope to achieve by this attack on the cities? As to their ultimate objective, their maximum goal, prisoner interrogations and captured documents seemed to leave no doubt. They hoped, at the best, to bring down the Saigon government and win the war, presumably either by forcing a defeated enemy to the peace table or by actually capturing his capital. To achieve that knockout victory, the 60,000 or so troops they committed to the battle had two prime targets. First, to seize as much real estate as possible, such as the presidential palace, the U.S. embassy, military headquarters, provincial capitals. And second, to kidnap or assassinate members of the thinning ranks of Vietnamese leadership. But they had shorter range objectives about which they could be far more certain of success. They expected the Allies to pull their troops off the pacification campaign in the countryside and bring them in for the defense of the cities. They expected the Americans to commit some of their reserves, at least, to the defense of the cities rather than hold them for the big battles expected at the demilitarized zone. They expected to create maximum economic confusion and disruption and to create new hordes of refugees among which the seeds of discontent against the government could be sown. They expected, by destroying the myth of the security of the cities, to widen the credibility gap that exists here too between what the people are told and what they see about them. And the experts do not agree on the objectives or on the amount of success the communists had in achieving.
They have certainly disrupted the pacification effort for the time being. For how long, I don't know. We have yet full reports on the situation. They have interrupted the addictive lines of communication, which are now being opened up again. What other effect they may have had, I don't know, on the population.
The war damages.
He don't have cancer, which we were worried about. It was his prostate that he was having worked on, although at the recent Bob's age, I don't know whether there's any point fooling with that or not. But Ruth thought that he was going to be all right, although he's not a well man, and she told us she didn't want him to do a damn thing. She could keep him from it. Yeah. And she told me to discourage him from signing.
But, oh, yeah, that goes with me. I'm dependent, a lot of people depend on
Bob's a hell of a nice fella. He's a real estate agent that was honest. And otherwise, he could make a hell of a lot of money. I mean, he was, Bob was trying too hard to help his customers instead of trying to help himself. And it seems like that don't work anymore, Guy. That mm-hmm. used to be the way to do, you know, yeah. But people don't really appreciate it.
No. I don't believe so. It don't look like it.
No. He's a good fella. And I hate like hell to see him. You take this community around here. I've heard Bill Wynn and Henry Burry and some of them make fun of Bob, and I know that they have made fun of me the same way. But I'm about, because he'd make certain statements, and they would, since they weren't familiar with it, didn't know what he was talking about, then they put it down. You see, this is the way people do. If they don't understand what you're talking about, then they just it just doesn't exist. You see what I mean?
Well, I never thought anybody would hardly take exception to what Roberts said to you.
Well, Bob would sometimes talk about somebody he had known. Let's say, I don't know where Bob comes from. I've forgotten. He's totally
Pennsylvania,
and he had started. So, you know, something in the conversation would bring it to mind. And maybe he'd mention some prominent name or something like that. Bob could be a name dropper, but I think he was telling the truth.
Yeah.
He really did know these people. And then they didn't know him, so they threw off on him. And as I told you a moment ago, I saw Bill guilty of things like this. I used to, I don't have a whole lot of respect for Bill anymore, because a man with all his opportunities who is willing to shut these things out instead of trying to come up to them. You know what I mean? I was talking one day to Jimmy Strange. You know, I was a Goldwater man. And I was talking to Jimmy Strange, and Jimmy was for Goldwater. And Bill made the remark, he heard us talking, and I was throwing off on Johnson, and Bill heard us talking. He didn't make this statement directly to me. He just made the statement for my ears, you see. He says, well, there's boats and planes leaving this country every day for people who don't like our government. And I wouldn't let that pass. I owed Bill $2,000 at that time, and I still wouldn't let it pass. In fact, I owe him $300 now, and haven't been able to pay him. But I've never hidden from him or tried to dodge him. So I told him, I said, Bill, I'm ashamed of you. I says, I've always liked you and respected you, but I says, I'm ashamed to hear you make a remark like that. I says, that's pretty stupid. I says, I love my country more, by God, not less, because I'm willing to raise hell and fight about it. Now, if I just willing to run and leave the country, or could leave the country, I says, it's easy enough for $1 million to talk like that, but I says, if I was able to leave the country and run left, that wouldn't mean that I love my country anymore, or that I love my country more than the people who are willing to accept this goddamn shit, because that's what it is. I says, any time we get a sumbitch in office, and I'm convinced he's a sumbitch, I'm going to try to get him out. And he apologized to me.
Let me tell you, what's Beatty going to do with that place next door?
He go sell it. He's trying to sell it, and I'm so goddamn scared about it. I wish the hell I could buy it. I don't want it. But
yeah,
the minute he sells it, I'm going to have to get out.
Yeah. It just depends on who comes in.
That's right, and damn near anybody, because there's one person in a goddamn million today is not thinking strictly of money. And I don't blame them. I don't criticize them for it. But it's not going to help me. There's going to be a nigger problem over there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to destroy my property and my business.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to keep me fighting and raising hell all the time. So, and Beatty's not going to do it on purpose. I mean, he'll try to, but he ain't damn fool enough, and I don't expect him to be, to lose a sale just
He's trying to get out from under something.
Right.
What sort of business could take that over, Paul?
Well, I tell you, a guy would tell you something. Now, this is in the strictest confidence. I don't think I can do anything about it, but anyhow, if I am able to, then I don't want anything said about it. I don't want in the liquor business. Now, if I was smarter than I am, I would want in the liquor business.
Mm-hmm.
And Beatty would turn that place over to me and Ruth and let us run it. And he would make us partners in it if we would approach him and tell him that's what he wanted to do. But I'm not temperamentally suited to sell whiskey. Because when some trashy son of a bitch and some nigger bastard comes in there shooting off his goddamn mouth, I'm going to floor his ass. And I'm not going to degrade myself and demean myself to sell a pint of whiskey. I don't mean that I got anything against selling whiskey. I have it. If I want a drink, I'll take it. If I wanted to sell a pint, I'd do that. And I have sold plenty of it. I don't mean as a bootlegger,
yeah,
but worth it. But I'm not temperamentally suited for it. I wouldn't be a success at it because I just can't put up with.
You better take too much.
That's right. So, I would like to buy the place just to protect the little bit that I've got here. Now, since I don't have the money to buy something just for a pet, and I'm not that stupid to invest that kind of money and not use it, here's what I thought I would do with it. And I've mentioned it to my wife, but she hadn't said anything one way or the other. I want to take that place, sell the whiskey license for $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, take the building and remodel it and lease it out for various businesses, make a sort of a shopping center over there.
Mm-hmm.
You see, there's the room for it.
Oh, is it?
Oh yeah, hell yes. I could put at last count, I figured I could put 12 good-sized businesses in the building as it is, just by putting some partitions in, you see, and cutting a couple extra doorways. That's right.
Oh, I didn't realize they had all that.
That's a hell of a big building.
Well, how much is he going to have to get out of it?
That's another thing that I'm going to tell you, and anybody can find it out by talking to him, I guess, but I don't want it knowing around too much because it's such a good buy. Somebody will buy it. In fact, somebody who doesn't have any money could conceivably get it. $40,000 he'll take for it. He wants more than that, but he'll take that. Yeah, including the whiskey license.
Yeah.
And the whiskey license are worth up to $25,000. And they were offered and turned down $75,000 for that place before they closed it down. But you see, that's the mistake Beatty made, was to close it down.
Mm-hmm.
He was having trouble with art, but he just wanted to... Beatty's impulsive, you see. He... just like he remodeled that place and of his own, and everybody was telling him not to, that Gainesville was going wet. He couldn't, he's a hell of a nice guy,
well,
but he couldn't stand for somebody else to tell him.
Everything he'd done for a generation has made money. He just, more money he spent up there, the more money he made.
No, he's been losing money since he remodeled.
I know. But up until then, it wasn't so much getting
going.
But
he had a different situation
then.
Yeah.
Well, now you had
he didn't make, Beatty's lost money all along. Beatty started out with a little place he had rented, a little place next door. It was a little tiny place. And he started out with that. Well, he didn't start out with that. He started out with a little place alongside the road, a little shack. And there was a demand for it then, you see. And Beatty, he doesn't, the public, most people don't like him because they don't know him. He's a hell of a lot finer man than they know. They have to know him the way I know him to know that he is a fine man. What I mean is, he's not... a boy that runs and sits in church every Sunday, but he does little things on the quiet all the time to help people that the public don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But they go in up there and they see Beatty, and Beatty's shy, see, and they
mm-hmm.
see him looking like this and not talking to him, and they go away cussing him, see,
mm-hmm.
because they don't bother to know him.
Mm-hmm.
Beatty got started that place over there and borrowed some money from Buddy Huff and got that place started, and it was a success, and he started making money. Then he started trying to help other people and started losing his ass. His brother-in-law lost him thousands of dollars. And not only him, but other brothers-in-law. Then Doc Maradon. Yeah, but Doc, his son-in-law, has cost him a lot of money. Of course, I guess that's not wasted because he's really making it, and he's a fine doctor and a fine man. I didn't like this son of a bitch. I thought he was a fairy, you know, but I've gotten to know him, and he's a good doctor, and while he's high-priced, I know that he doctors people who can't afford it also, see, and he has doctored me, and I couldn't afford it. I paid him, but he didn't charge me as much as he would have somebody with more money, you know. But anyway, he took Art in over here, and I guess that I have to take the blame for most of that. I talked him into it, and
well, they never did get very far.
Well, Art was doing a hell of a business over here, but he wasn't giving Beatty any money. And it's pretty easy to operate a business and make a lot of money for yourself if you're not paying any expenses out, you see. Art would sell a steak for $1.75 that you'd have to pay $4 for uptown. Okay, he had people lined up out there and have to lock the door and let them in, you see, a little at a time. He's doing a hell of a business, and he's taking the business away from Beatty up there, you see.
And he's doing it with Beatty's meat.
Right, but he wasn't making a profit. I knew he wasn't making a profit, and I mentioned it to him, and he gave me to understand it's not my business, which it wasn't. And but he liked being known as the steak king, you see. I mean, he had the most popular place in the two counties. Meanwhile, he's taking all of Beatty's business. Beatty was going broke up there. That's what you ought to have, guy, up there with the room you got and everything.
And the nicest dogs, I think. They're mine,
They're clean. They're intelligent.
They're intelligent.
And you know they're good cattle dogs?
I have seen a...
Well, what I mean is they're intelligent enough they can be trained to be good cattle dogs. Yeah. They're not bred for that purpose. Yeah. They're bred to kill and to fight.
Back
and
in the country, we had one that there was a good cattle
and, dog. And they'll hunt. Sons of bitches will hunt. They'd make good hog dogs. I wouldn't let mine. Some fellows have dogs, and it's just... it's just a possession. I never could like these bastards around here that would take these dogs and pin them up in a little cage and haul them around their truck. And they were just a possession, just like their rifle, you see, and use them for hunting. And I can't see anything that lives and breathes treated like that. And so I wouldn't let my dogs hunt hogs because... I don't want them tore up. I mean, what's the purpose, you see?
Yeah.
And they're going to get tore up and eventually get killed if they hunt hogs. But they'd make damn good hog dogs.
These fellas that hunt hogs are not necessarily good dog men. Now, you take a fella like old Mike Weaver up there at McNuffin.
Yeah.
He don't hunt hogs. Impression I have is he knows how to train dogs and take care of them.
Yeah. I just wouldn't tear my dogs up like that, that's all. Although I would hunt hogs quicker than I would something else. I just don't get any kick out of killing myself. Mm-hmm. I would kill a man, a white man, or some of these son of a bitch of niggers come to my place. I would kill them, and it might bother me later, but I wouldn't hesitate to kill them. if I had to do it. But I won't go out here and load a gun with double-aught buckshot and blow 49 dove out of the sky just so I can pick up one that wasn't blowed to pieces. I won't do it. I just don't get that. I got quail running around my yard here, and squirrels and rabbits, and I'll kick anybody's ass that bothers any of them. You see what I mean? I just, when man killed to eat, it was justified. And I don't criticize the man who hunts for sport now. I simply say that there's other things that I enjoy more than killing. But I will sure as hell, just like the smart goddamn nigger that comes to my place up there, and he's rude and crude, and I grab his ass right now. And he don't ever get the second chance. Now that's so I can kill a man easier than I can kill an animal, because I'll have a reason to kill a man. But I never have killed a man, and I don't want to, but I would if I, provoked enough. But I just don't.
You know, this thing up here, when a fella like B.B. misjudges, that hurts the whole community, Paul.
Well, yes, but the community don't, they don't appreciate it. And so they don't deserve any consideration, particularly this community. They want to see everybody fail. Do you know that these people around here, I used to work my ass off for this community. I started their Chamber of Commerce and everything. They didn't have a damn thing going, didn't have a damn thing doing. And when I opened this place, finally got it up, I'm not talking about my enemies, because you expect this from your enemies, but my friends said behind my back, I'll give him 6 weeks.
Oh, you mean your store?
Yeah, they can't make it. They can't make it. This is no damn place for a ice cream store. He can't make it. I'll give him 6 weeks. He'll be closed down. And because they didn't want to be made a liar of, they stayed away. They stayed away in droves. And I got my business from out of town. But they forgot one thing about me, that if they were more astute and a little smarter, they would have known this about me. I will make something succeed where somebody else might let it fail, because I'm that damn stupid. I'm too hard headed. I won't let something. I just won't quit. See.
Well, Paul, what keeps you going up there? What's your most profitable?
My sandwiches.
Yeah.
But what keeps us going is just what I was talking about, our damn hard headedness. But anyway, after these people saw that we were going to make it anyway, then they're curious, you see. They don't want to miss out on anything, so they started coming.
Oh, really?
And they said the same thing about Art over there. They says he couldn't, goddamn place, there's too many liquor stores here now, they couldn't make it.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't feel that way. I said I liked Art then. I thought I knew him. He has a nice personality when he wants to be nice. And
nice as customers.
Well, no, he's nice to everybody. Art's a funny fella. He'll give you the goddamn shirt off his back, and then he'll get mad and insult his very best customer for no goddamn reason at all. I think he's something wrong with him. Anyway, he started taking John's business down here, you think? And then these same people who cussed him and made fun and everything started coming to his place and became his best customers. So I'm well educated to people now. I wanna like people. I don't want to know these things about people. I'd rather not know them. But it's the goddamn truth, and I'd be a damn fool if I didn't know it. You see what I mean?
That's right.
That's the reason we got Lyndon Johnson for president. People don't have any principle. They don't give a goddamn.
Yeah.
And man run for sheriff down here, and they say, Paul, I do this for you, and I do that for you. And Paul says, okay, by God, I'll support you then. And he forgets all about that he's going to destroy his goddamn county, you see. He's just thinking about that few bucks that he picked up right now. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Or that the sheriff is a good friend of his, that sort of thing. So this is the way we get people like that in office. You know the big regret I have? Seriously. There's nothing I can do about it. I wouldn't have made it for that same reason. But knowing what I know now and having reached this point, I had an opportunity 10 years ago, 15 years ago, to make it in politics. And, guy, this might sound awful stupid, awful conceited, and I hope you won't think about it that way, but it's conceivable. And Bill Wynn or any of them, if you should mention it to them, would make fun, laugh about it, but I conceivably could have been in the legislature right now if I had set out to make it in politics at that time, because Ferris Bryant and Wallace Sturgis and those boys used to come out here to see me. Because I was leading the community. I started their Chamber of Commerce, started out with a civic club and everything. And these guys would come out here to see me, not because they liked me particularly, that wasn't the point. They thought that I'd be beneficial to them. So they'd come out here to do things for my community, you see. They give us $2,000 a year. I got that for them, $2,000 every year for advertising. And anyway, when they tried to use me then, I would tell them, I say, yeah, I'm a nice fella. What do you stand for? And if they were unwilling to lay it on the table and be honest with me, or if they if I disagreed with what they stood for, I'd tell them, I'd say, hell no, I won't help you, I'll fight you. I'll do every goddamn thing in the world I can to keep you out of office. And it's just no goddamn way to get in politics. And they'd say, another thing I would say, I'd say, well, the hell with the party. I don't give a goddamn about the party. I don't give a damn if you're a Democrat or a Republican. If you're a good man, I'm for you. You see? And this ain't the way to do it. And I just couldn't kiss ass and suck around like that, but I wish the hell as I had. I wish the hell I had, because today, any man who survives is going to have to learn to do that.
Yeah.
And I've never learned it.
That's right.
And but still, it's
all done, Mother.
You know, it's awful.
Yeah.
It's awful to sum up your life to look back and there was a time you can look back and you say, well, I haven't made a success in my life. I'm not anybody. I haven't done a goddamn thing. I don't have $1 million. I don't have this or that. But I've always been honest, and I have self-respect. And this is more than some men can say, so I'll settle for that. You could used to, and you can look back and say that. But today, you can't.
do that because, guy, if you are going to survive, if you're going to live, if you're going to eat, if you're going to have a place to lay your fucking head at night, you're going to have to lose your principles because our government has set the pace now, set us on that road. That if you're not willing to do those things, you cannot survive. And you know, this kills my damn soul. After all these fucking years, in other words, that makes all those years wasted, you see. Because if I was going to be a son of a bitch and a crook, I should have started that early so it could benefit. Now it's too late for me to benefit from it. And I don't want to turn to that kind of a son of a bitch just to stay alive. But it looks like it all happened.
Oh, I know what you mean. Let me tell you. You know this boy over here, Don McKay?
Yeah.
Did Don ever, has he been doing any good at all then?
No. He never had. Don's no fool. He could have been successful in nearly any field.
Yeah.
But Don's lazy.
Oh.
And he is a dreamer, and there's nothing wrong with being a dreamer. In fact, I like that in people. But Don will not. I mean, he'll lay plans, and he'll talk about it. But then he won't put these things to work in a constructive manner. And now that he don't need to, now that he don't have to do anything, well, he just ain't going to, see.
What are you doing now? Just on Social Security?
No, his wife, he married this woman with
a
lot of money, you see. Her father died and left everything to her.
Yeah.
And, luckily, he put part of it where Don couldn't touch it, so that's what they're living on, the trust fund. The rest of it, he got hold of that and throwed it away, so that's gone. But they have a few bucks every month, maybe, I don't know, 100 or 200 bucks a month coming in, and they exist on it.
Well, now, I know Don, he's a right gifted boy.
He can write, he can talk, and he is a first-class sheet metal man, believe it or not.
But he won't do it.
He won't do it.
That's the queerest thing.
He had $50,000 worth of sheet metal equipment down there, or used to have it, just gone to hell. Just laying there and rusty, you see, and going to hell.
Yeah. Oh, shoot. Paul, I enjoyed the business. Dad, brother.
What did they ask the guy that long for?
I don't know.
He called the other day, said you're coming down. He never showed up.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I might have come by and seen you busy or something like that.
Well, don't let that bother you. Listen, you'll never see me that I'm not busy. You never will. That's just. I like to loaf as good as the next man. But I just. Can't do it. Have you gone back to school yet?
I'm working up there.
I haven't seen you since you. Last time I talked to you, you had left up there temporarily or something. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I have been off right for a while. Yeah.
You know Doc Davis?
Who?
Davis, Ed Davis.
Mm-hmm.
General education, I guess. He lives out here on the Rochelle Road.
Yeah.
Hell of a nice fellow. You ought to know him if you don't know him.
You got to get to work done. And I'll see you. And you call up for Wynn. We'll have to send that over to you.
All right.
any way you want to get it, sorry, me. You think about those dogs. They just about to eat you up when you see them. And then they get acquainted with you like that, and they want to get you.
Come on, just wiggle around there a minute. Come over here and have something to eat.
I'll see you.
Oh,
hadn't been post office. Maybe that's where you're
How are you? Ms. Barr's down for a few minutes. Where she did it.
I don't know.
Did you bring me anything? I never thought you were a darn thing.
Yes, anyone with that background ought to have a good number of expensive vices.
I should say, it's just like the wood. They are usually not to have when it's noticed for fast horses and good looking women. But they're noticed for fast women too, I expect. Well, I like your wife so much. I hope she come back.
I tell you what, I told her, we were talking about it, and I told you that sometime when we come down there, I want to bring that little machine back to the office, and we'll just make that tour and get you to talk about all your,
Well, you know, the other day after you all left, I guess it was. Well, it's Sunday afternoon, and my house is just dirty and everything. And I got out, and I cleaned up. It doesn't look like it did. And no one did. Yeah, it was too late. I had locked the door, you know, and
everybody's
gone.
You see, we live way off the road back there, and we get so we don't need.
No, don't have to. Don't have to.
We ought to. Yes, it's
all
on natural. We ought to.
All on natural. But I tell you, I'm going to be nice to y'all. You going to take about sour oranges?
Yes, you make jelly out of them.
You make some kind of juice out of them, too. Would you like to have this? You insisted I take my own keen on them, and I'd like to taste them.
Yes,
they say if you have some.
Mammy would like
to. Have something good.
But I'd rather you keep yourself.
No, I'd rather be. If I say nice as you all are, I'm going to give it to you.
Well, I'm glad I ran into you. I enjoyed the visit.
Well, I always enjoy seeing you. And now, Dr. Mr. Bob, I want to.
Then it was a week, 10 days later, I was by there. Mr. Waters had died. He didn't survive the operation very long. And I came to inquire about him and about me, and found out that she was ailing. She had fallen on the porch, on the stairs. And Dr. Strange told her that the pressure she'd been under, and then that fall, both, had just given her high blood pressure. And she had that pain in the head, and it just wouldn't leave her. And it was interesting. We went in her front room, and she asked me if it was warm enough. She said she had cut on the gas. I told her it was certainly warm enough for me. Most rooms were so hot, it made my cheeks red. Why, she says over at May's, it's so hot she can't hardly breathe. And said over there she wasn't cold. She was wearing two sweaters, and the rest of the house was cold. So that sounded like the good old days. This is 7th of March on Thursday, my first breather from the end of the term, and it's a beautiful day. The sun's shining, and we've had a little rain, and a little air circulating from the east, and I went over to pay my respects to Roberts. I hadn't looked in on him for a week or 10 days, just passed there. I play up every day. Ruth was in the candy shop, and she hardly had time to talk to me. She was going up to the house and get Esther and take her to the hospital. She's going to stay till Saturday, and she didn't know what in the world was going to happen to Esther. And Roberts was going to keep the shop open while she was gone. So between them, I got some mighty fine talk. Then I let Roberts rest a minute, and I went over to make an open talk to Buster and one or two others, and came back, and Roberts talked some more. So this is the first time. He's pretty good now. His mind works pretty good, and his voice is pretty strong. It's weak compared to what it was. And his recollection not quite as good, you know. He doesn't have the vigor. He's not geared. But I'm awfully proud of some of the things that he set down.
lunch.
That'd be a good time, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Anybody spend time?
No, Esther isn't. I got to take her to the hospital today.
I just saw a patient across the thing.
Yeah, I know. I'm telling you guys, anything more happens to this family, I'm going to leave home. Having problems. I don't know what will amount to yet. This today, she's going to be in there for 3 days, and I guess they're just going to make a check to find out.
Oh.
Means a slight operation to in the process of it. Mm-hmm. And I hope that they find it's all right and not too bad. I hope they can correct it with this, but I don't know. If they can't, then we're in for problems
mm-hmm.
with her. So I don't know. If this one thing is three more, how's your family doing?
All right. Now, this is something you told me already. Don't you know, I asked you, I forget now how the thing came up, but I had put a sign down there. Yes, I remember now. One Sunday afternoon, I put it up. It was just starting to drizzle. And this boy, Lucian,
Wood,
I said, you bring that sign and put it up, and I'll get this kind. He stood there in the hall of Mr. Francis Barnes.
Watched you.
Watched me. Talked to Tommy. While Tommy trimmed his horse's feet. And what struck me was that I couldn't have hired Tommy to go up there and trim my horse's feet if I had paid him a good price.
No, you can't. He's just that way, guy. He's a stern fool, that boy. Since he was that high.
Yeah.
You know, his mother, creature, I don't know whether you knew her or not. The father seems to be meaner than good. And she came up, that old woman come up here and asked me to make a phone call so that she could talk to somebody.
Okay.
And then she'd call her children. She'd be having trouble with him. He wouldn't let her do this or he wouldn't give her something she really needed. I never saw her in anything but complete rags. I mean, just. You know, just, they may not have had real holes in them, but they were just old, threadbare clothes. Poorest of the poor. And they lived for years and years and years in a house that was the equivalent of anything, Negro shack. Just shutters, you know, and all that sort of thing.
Okay.
And then they built this house down here. I guess the children finally got to do that.
Yeah.
And so they have been. He came out of Alabama or Georgia.
Yeah.
Years ago. Georgia cracker is what he is. And he thinks that he knows all there is to know about the Bible and everything else that everybody does on the face of this earth. And he started coming in here. I felt sorry for him, and I gave him a few pieces of candy. Boy, it got to where he wasn't taking baths too regularly. And I had customers coming in, and I had to stop that. So the last time he came, the Jacks were here, and I know they thought I was hard boiled, but I charged him for what he got. He isn't back.
Mm-hmm.
I hated to do it, guy, but so help me, I couldn't have it with the people that I have coming in here.
Oh, yeah.
I just couldn't do it.
Ooh, that's sort of hard to believe. Anyone would just, he had packed melons just like these
you
boys.
You know that his wife. Children had to dry the seeds from the melons that were left over every year. He never bought seeds. He wouldn't buy seeds. And he never put fertilizer on his ground unless it was absolutely. I don't know if he ever did or not.
Oh.
He doesn't believe in that.
Oh, you mean he's that kind of
thing? Yes, sir, I mean he is. I'm telling you, you get with him sometime, you'll find out. Maybe now he'll get out into religion. I don't know. Last time he talked to me, that's all I got. I saw him about a week ago up in the red and white store. Boy, I skittered around him. I said, "How do you do, Mr. Boy?" And I just kept right on going. I didn't want to get hung up because, boy, you can be hung up for 2 or 3 hours, squeezing just like that.
Yeah.
I went into the weavers one morning, and there he stood. And the next day she said, "You know, Miss," she said, "I feel sorry for that woman." She said, "Really? He almost drives me crazy."
Well, not somebody in. Just
can't stand and talk to you know like that. She had work to do. And he'd go in there and stand there and he starts and he can't see very good. And people feel sorry for him, you know. I did for a long time, but not now. I'm past that.
I thought he had been right enterprising.
Well, he's been a hard worker. And so he worked his family just as hard as he worked his own harder for himself.
Yeah.
And he did everything without spending a nickel. I could tell you about those seeds.
Yeah.
I know that. Any of those youngsters will tell you that.
Yeah. Well, now, Tommy had cooked after him.
Well, Tommy, I thought, being the youngest, getting away from him a little bit sooner, I thought he might be a little different, but he hasn't. He's just reverting right back to the, to a great extent.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Nyoka's had a tendency to try and pull him out of it.
Mm-hmm. And oh, the girl.
Yes, yeah, the girl he married, but she's had her troubles with him.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
Yes, and they almost blew up here. That's why I can't have Nyoka come back here. I can't. That's all there is to it.
Why?
Well, because the things that happened while she was here, their marriage pretty much exploded while she was here.
Over here?
Mm-hmm. While she was working for me.
This
was about 3-4 years ago. So.
Oh, I didn't know she had been doing that.
Mm-hmm. She worked for me for about a year and a half.
Oh, she did?
Yes. And I liked her. I liked her a lot, but then she changed. I'm not saying this outside guy because her family would never forgive me, but I don't do business with them anymore. Ever since that ruckus there with the pony, he didn't even feed that pony. He didn't give it water. Rob and I went over there and worried about that pony.
I was going over there, talking to him.
And finally, Robert got mad. He said he told us to take it out. Naomi came in the store one day with, well, I had a customer here, a good customer that I didn't want to lose. And she sat down in that chair. She said, listen, she said, I got Tommy over there. I'm going to put him back in the pasture. And
who
she said, he's off. Now, is it? Yes. She put it right into my dealings with my customer. Now, she knew better than that. She'd worked here long enough to know better than that. I said, Naoka, I cannot give you a key. I don't know if Betty Preston's got her animals in there now. And if anybody's got a key to that place, she has not. You'll have to go see her. Well, I got Tommy over there, and don't you think you can do something about it? He's over there holding him. I said, I can't do a thing about it now.
Really?
And finally, she got up and left. They're mad at us. Well, they can stay mad.
Well, I've seen Tommy over here stand there and talk to Robert for an hour at a time.
Yeah. Nothing more. And those are the kind of things that happen, then, God. I can't. I can't put up that kind of
stuff. Let me tell you. Robert's right there. Yeah, he's been out of the weather. He said, who? Why, I said, Mr. Roberts up here. Oh, he said, you know? He said, I've been building a house on the other side of town, and I just never see anybody anymore.
He didn't want to see us.
But he squatted there and trimmed the horses.
Well, they're probably birds of a feather, you know.
I want to read you something.
Yeah, let me see what time it is. I read this a long time ago, but I've forgotten it.
I suppose there's no way in the world a more elemental exchange of goods than among ourselves at the creek. The exchange does not even become barter and trade. We merely return favors. Old boss uses my truck to haul his vegetable crops to the station.